We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into an OBR Film Breakdown podcast. I will be joined in a crossover variety by All Eyes on Cleveland and Brad Ward as we do a bevy of different Browns topics. We're going to, you know, work through some mainstream stuff that was out there today. Also going to hit on also the wide receiver review that I've been trying to continue on for this OBR Film Breakdown podcast. So like digging into this whole thing, a lot of moving parts today. Brad, welcome into the show, man. Excited to have you. And obviously, you know, hope you're doing well, brother.
Yeah, man. Excited to be with you. First time since our game day previews ended that we've been able to catch up. So glad to do it, sir.
Yeah. So digging in, let's just jump in quick. So yeah. First thing that came out today, obviously from a newsworthy standpoint, for those of you paying attention to your Cleveland Browns, is the Pro Football Writers Association put out their all pro teams, which was nice because the Browns had three representatives on that list, Miles, Nick, and Joel Batonio, who have been at the forefront of all of this. I don't think there are really any surprises. I think this is more so, I think actually this is less surprising than I've seen some from the players list that's come out. So Nick Bosa, Miles Garrett, that means the big decision left off there was Micah Parsons from the defensive end units, which is a bit of a surprise. You know, this one got it right. Chris Jones, Quinnen Williams from a defensive tackle standpoint. Then you don't have Aaron Donald, but Aaron Donald didn't play a bunch. But they interestingly put Micah Parsons as an outside linebacker and Hassan Reddick, who I think Hassan Reddick had like 17 sacks. So he had a nice year for Philadelphia. But they only, this is where the listings get weird because those guys are edge rushers. I just will never understand why we can't delineate edge rushers from off ball linebackers.
Right.
There's only one first team off ball linebacker, Fred Warner. Who is, you know, Fred Warner is the modern Bobby Wagner when he's at his peak, the modern, he's probably better suited to say a modern Luke Kuechly. There's a clip out there of what Fred Warner did from a mugged up. I talked about this on yesterday's pod, Brad. He was, you know, sim pressure, mugged up in line of scrimmage and ran from the line of scrimmage, taking the 3x2 actually was able to cover CeeDee Lamb up the middle of the field and run stride for stride with a Fred Warner's a special player.
Yeah, he is.
Sauce Gardner, one of the few rookies to ever do this, first team all pro. Patrick Surtain, two young guys, Minka Fitzpatrick, Talanoa Hufanga, which is fascinating. I know myself and Hawaii Browns, who we were big Hufanga fans, who was taken in the middle rounds, late draft pick. So it's crazy seeing him being a first team all pro. It's always, you know, you see your guys that you really like when you're a draft study, but they don't end up with your team. On the offensive side, Mahomes is your first team quarterback. I think that's obvious. Nick and Josh Jacobs, obvious. Tyreek and Justin Jefferson. Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson feels right. Travis Kelce, the only tight end. Jason Kelce at center, so both the Kelce brothers. Batonio, Zach Martin feels right. And then Lane Johnson, Trent Williams are your tackles. I don't think there's any real surprise there on that list. It's seems mostly universal, just the finagling to get Parsons in there as an outside linebacker I do think it does a little bit of an unfair injustice to some of the other off-ball linebackers. There's only one, but yeah. So it's cool to see the Browns get three, though, which speaks to, like, I don't know, I'm kind of looking here. Philadelphia has one, two. So the Eagles have two, three. And then, yeah, I think the Eagles only have three. So I imagine the Browns are up there with the unique three players on that list. The 49ers have Trent Williams and Fred Warner and Hufanga, so they had three. So, again, you're looking at teams with elite talent here. Kansas City has three with Chris Jones, Jason Kelce, and Mahomes. Or, sorry, Travis Kelce, Mahomes. You know who I don't see anyone on here from is the Cincinnati Bengals, which is interesting, right? You know, so speaking to elite talent. But pretty cool to see them get that, right?
Yeah, very cool to see that. You know, speaks to their high-end talent on this roster, right? Betonio, Garrett, and Chubb are certainly worthy, and I think it's interesting too what you said about the linebackers, and it kind of goes to the overall, I mean, just a trend now for years where they kind of just devalue that position in general, and now they're devaluing it a little bit in the way they recognize it as well. So
more seems like the only place that gets that right is Pro Football Focus anymore.
Sure,
delineates that the correct way. Okay, let's switch off that. That's the only, like, again, league-wide noteworthy thing that doesn't involve those teams that were in the teams that are still alive in the playoffs, because that's about it right now. But looking around at stuff around the Browns staff, so we're still kind of waiting to hear some of the final say on some guys are going to go or stay. There are still, you know, we've heard some things about Chad O'Shea on the offensive side interviewing. We've heard about Jeff Howard interviewing in L.A., linebacker's job. there's a lot of interesting stuff. I heard that chuckle. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on about, like, originally we heard from Mary Kay Cabot, who's been kind of putting this in her notes, that the Browns would be keeping most of the defensive staff. Well, she walked that back a little bit today. And again, this is just one person's opinion or what one person is hearing sort of around what the Browns are going to be doing with this staff stuff. So it's interesting to kind of follow along and see sort of where this is all going, because these decisions are a huge decisions and they have to be made in a relatively quick time span. Here's what she said most recently. And I think it's her article that was just up yesterday about key factors, and Miles Garrett was a key factor in Schwartz hire and Chad O'Shea's interviewing around. I think that's the title. Secondary coach Jeff Howard interview with the Chargers linebackers job last week, could be on the move. Some of the same with a few of the other defensive assistants. And again, those guys are just looking to survive. The NFL at the assistant coach level, some guys are on an escalator to the top. Some guys are just looking to survive and keep jobs. Like, that's just how it goes. And you know, you're always fighting to keep your connections. She says Stefanski gave the coaches last week off while he wrapped up hiring defensive coordinator Jim Schwartz, and the staff should be finalized over the next couple weeks. While Stefanski and Schwartz will work together to retool the defensive staff, Stefanski will have the final say over who comes and goes. Of course, that's always going to be the case. Like, he's the head coach, but if Schwartz really wants somebody, he's going to get him. So it's a bit of a walk back, Brad. Are you surprised to hear that? Because I think really what people started to consider as the definitive word on this was that at the press conference, Schwartz said all of coaching staff maneuvering is Kevin Stefanski's job. And then, you know, we had seen Mary Kay Cabot kind of reiterate that in one of her write-ups following that time. So I had thought that was coach speak. I had thought it was just him hey, I'm falling in line as a soldier. But I thought that there would be some guys that would come with him. I still expect that. Do you expect that as well?
I do. I actually, listen, Jake, I thought when he said that in the press conference, it was just kind of a tip of the cap to the head coach falling in line, right? The right thing to say in the press conference. And then that he would have the majority of the say on who is made up of his defensive staff. And he mentioned input, right? Like, so I'll have the input on. So if he wants somebody, I'm sure they would bring him aboard if that person is available. I don't know if there is anybody worthy on this staff that they're like, hey, we really think this guy's an up and comer and we want to keep him, he or she. But I was kind of under the impression, regardless of what had been written up to this point, Jake, that they would kind of clean house on that side of the ball. I don't really know why there's this, like, why I don't understand why there would be such a layover or a hangover of people on a staff that you already cut the head off the staff. It makes sense to bring in guys that work and already know the language and things like that that Schwartz is going to be using.
Yeah, to me, it's your point is fair and one that I've thought too. I think some of it is contract stuff. Guys are under contract. You have to let, if you want to give a guy his full staff, you have to let those people out of contracts. So that means you would have to pay, for an example,
sure,
two defensive line coaches. And that's never ideal. Not that Jimmy has a problem clearly cutting checks, but I do think that that's an element of some of what they like to do. And again, some of these other guys, there's also reputations tied to all of this. You know, there's a chance Kevin really, really likes some of them. And he doesn't want to see them all just fired off and just give it. Not that he's not trying to do the best thing for the team, but there's also a delicate balance of like giving guys a chance to go get other jobs, yeah, as a part of all of this too. So, you know, like there's just, I think there's a lot, let me put it this way. There's a lot more at play here than we understand. There's relationship stuff. There's helping guys out. You want those guys to land on their feet. You know, like I said, when we were talking about it in season, Brad, like Jeff Howard is on the up and up. Like he was the defensive coordinator at the Shrine game, I believe. Like, this guy is the next logical step you do in the NFL is you're a coordinator of the run or pass game, and then you get a chance. If your team's really good, you know, you get a chance to do one of those coordinator jobs. You're like next up. That's like the tier of this whole thing. Same with the offensive side. Like,
yeah,
Chad O'Shea's the pass game coordinator. That's the label. It was like a label. I'm not sure what year that was created and
yeah,
when that came out, because it wasn't a normal thing like 15 years ago, I would imagine.
No, me neither.
But I think it's a way that they have given like a built-in way of climbing the ladder and getting your opportunity more clearly defined. Let me put it that way. And I think it used to be more like assistant head coach tag. Mm-hmm. But they're moving this around to say, here's what this guy does in a more definitive sort of way. And he's more of the pass game specialist, blah, blah, blah. And then it gives you, it gives those guys a chance to work up the escalator from there. But I do, to your point, expect a lot of them to be gone, largely because to me, it's just not a very skilled staff. Like they don't have a bunch of guys outside of Ben Bloom. I've been pretty vocal on this pod now, and you're probably tired of hearing me say this if you're a listener. Like Ben Bloom's the only one and again, he's the run game coordinator this year, which makes his next opportunity as the anchor of a run defense that was historically bad, probably pretty challenging.
Yeah.
Nothing against him. I'm not saying he was out here working with a bunch of fine utensils here when he's trying to carve this whole thing into place, but it's just a tricky thing. But there's just a bunch of guys who have kind of come from the college ranks and have worked their way through various college locations and opportunities and like have found themselves in an NFL. That's how it kind of works. You get in as a quality control guy, you then start as the assistant defensive backs coach or something like that, and you get a chance. So I don't know. There could be some stragglers that stay on if they get a high recommendation from you know, Joe Woods, and perhaps they impress Schwartz in an interview with him, because it's just going to be another open interview scenario, right,
yeah,
for some of these guys with the Browns. So maybe they stick around. I mean, again, to me, the two guys with the most experience from an NFL perspective would be Tarver, the linebackers coach, who could make, you know, I think you could make a pretty good argument that he could stay because linebackers play pretty well, given mm-hmm. all the chaos that's gone on around that position. And he's been a coordinator at various levels, the Raiders, the Stanford Cardinals, in the college level. He's been around. He's done it. Probably brings a wide range of experience. And again, it's just how they feel about him internally. We don't really know. But I think that Tarver and Ben Bloom are the only ones that ultimately have a resume kind of that they could lean into, that sort of thing. Otherwise, it's an open guess, man. It's an open guess. So
yeah,
I'm not sure, bud.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
I think that you're right about Tarver and Bloom, you know, as maybe potential holdovers. It's just, it feels like to me, and you're right, it goes further than just, you know, but I don't know, maybe I haven't paid close enough attention. I guess I thought it was more of an outlier for a guy to make it through this kind of a change than it is to, you know what I mean, commonplace mm-hmm. for somebody to hang around on a unit. It's weird because you're not changing regimes or anything. You're just changing like half
yeah, that's
of
the
a
thing.
Regime, right? So,
yep.
But the way that this team is kind of separated offensive and defensive, it feels like two separate units and very much two separate like kind of regimes almost, the way that they're handling it too, with Schwartz coming in And in order to streamline things, I think it would behoove them to bring in some people that already speak his language and stuff. So,
yeah, for sure. Well, that's something you're pointing out there is, you know, it's unique because they're not turning over the entire group.
Right.
It's just a half. So I think this is one of the few times that we have seen. You know, most of the time Browns coaches go with their coordinators, head coaches go. It is not often we see a head coach retain his job and hire a new coordinator on a side of the ball they're not in. But we know the Todd Haley hire. We know how disastrous that was. But Hugh kept his staff on offense, right? But just hired a coordinator that I feel like we all feel like he was forced to hire. But anyway, like, to me, this is unique from a Browns perspective. So we don't necessarily have like, oh, well, back in 2013, they did it and did it this way. Yeah. Most of the head coaches have gone and that goes with it. So this will be a learning experience on how they handle it from every angle. So we'll be paying close attention to it. And again, if you're wondering, like, well, who the hell would Schwartz hire? We have put out an article, and really the guys that we are focusing on here are guys that he's connected to that are open to being moved. Like, the first example is Corey, I think it's pronounced Undlin, U-N-D-L-I-N, who's currently the, again, we're talking about a pass game coordinator and DB's coach with San Francisco. Now, that's a name that's going to be a hot name. Mm-hmm. My thought is that the way San Francisco just brings up next man up from grooming coaches, as D'Amico Ryan should get a head coaching job somewhere. It just comes down to whether there's an organization position to be patient enough to wait on him, because they're going to, you know, they could be in Super Bowl, could be 3 weeks here. But then that feels like Unlin, who would naturally slide into that role as the DC in San Francisco. And again, like, he was connected to Schwartz for 3 years. He was a D coordinator in Detroit. He was with Schwartz from 2016 to 2019, running defensive backs for him. He's the, like, biggest, I guess, air quotes, hotshot of that staff that Schwartz had. Matt Burke's another guy, a Dartmouth Ivy League connection type. He was with the Arizona Cardinals this past year, which means he is currently unsure of his future. He was with Schwartz in 2019 as a defensive specialist, and then was the run game coordinator in 2020 and D-line coach. So that is a guy to specifically pay attention. I posted a one-on-one interview Burke did with the Eagles in-house X and O people talking about Javon Hargrave, who, again, another guy we would like to be potentially bringing into Cleveland, Brad. But other guys that are worth looking at, Marcus Robertson was again with the Cardinals, was connected to Schwartz as his defensive backs coach way back in Detroit when he was with Detroit from 12 to 13. That's when Schwartz was a head coach. He went to the Raiders, Broncos, and now he's with the Cardinals. Is a DB's coach there. So pay attention to Robertson, again, a former DB himself in the 90s. Dino Vasso is currently with the Texans as the cornerbacks coach there, was with Schwartz as a quality control and assistant secondary coach from 16 to 19, and then became the assistant coordinator, kind of like an assistant head coach, right, in 2020. So there's a deep connection there. And again, he was with the Texans. They let go of Lovie Smith. He's an open potential hiring candidate. There are some other guys like Ken Flahole, who is with Kansas City currently as an outside linebackers coach. Don't know if he would be leaving that location. Tim Hawk is another guy who was with Schwartz for a while as a safeties coach, but currently is, I think he's currently somewhere. I'm not sure exactly where he is right now, but he used to be with the Browns a long time ago. Marquan Manuel took over for Dan Quinn as the coordinator of the Falcons. He currently is with the Jets. So it's hard if he's not getting a secondary job, he's the safeties coach with the Jets. That one's tough, but Nate Olley's another one. Nate Olley was, 2019 and 2020 with the assistant defensive line coach, and he was with the Colts last year. And obviously Jeff Saturday is you know, I don't know who the hell knows what they're going to do, but if Saturday comes back, Ollie could end up staying there. But that's about it. I mean, I listed everybody who's a connection, so that article's still out there at the OBR, but I would imagine three or four of those guys come, Brad. I just think that I know he talked about when he got to Philly, he didn't know anybody when he went on that staff, but
yeah,
like,
that was interesting.
I don't know. Yeah.
Here's what I would say about this, about those names. And I think that, I actually think a few of these guys are really good candidates that you named because of, you know, and I'll reference back to Mary Kay Cabot's article, a little bit here, but she goes into some depth about, I don't know if it was this, actually it wasn't her article, but maybe it was a Terry Pluto article, earlier, this week. But it was you know, referencing the connection that Schwartz and Barry made in Philadelphia. So, and how much that had to do with this hire that they actually got to, you know, and Schwartz talked about it in the presser, right? You know, this is a guy that I want to work with some, you know, someday and all that stuff. But like that connection was there. And that probably kind of maybe swayed this a little bit, is their existing relationship. And I think that because of that, all these Philly guys that you have listed in this article from that same time frame that are now available due to, you know, regime firings make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. There's the guys that are floating out looking for their next landing spot because they don't know if their potential to be hired or not is still going to be in place when the next guy gets there. That's the last thing you want is, hey, I had this opportunity to go with the Browns and Schwartz, who I know,
yep,
but I waited on the next guy because of whatever, whatever, and now I'm out of a job. Like, that's the worst case scenario. So, all right, looking forward here, one other thing that came out today that was pretty interesting was this Summer Sports, who's it's Summer with one M. So keep that in mind. They do great data work. I don't know if you're afraid of it, but this actually came out on the 20th. But I thought it was interesting that they're looking at top head coaches and win probability added over expected. So it's WPAOE. Now, how they quantify this is not something I'm going to pretend to know here. They usually will take the Ben Baldwin analytic look at the fourth down decisions of how much win probability it adds, some of those different things, but it's measured out in a bunch of different ways. Did the coach give fourth down win probability added, 2-point conversion decision win probability added, first half timeouts, second half timeouts, and delay of game? Kevin Stefanski checks in ninth, which is, you know, right in front of Andy Reid, in front of Doug Peterson. The top of the list is Nick Sirianni, who's done just fantastic work up in Philly and in pretty much every regard, not just some of these things. He's done well, but you get Sean McDermott's below that, Dan Campbell, Brandon Staley, Matt Eberflus.
Eberflus.
Jeez, welcome, Jake.
I'm pretty sure it's Eberflus. That's how I've been saying it for years. So,
John Harbaugh, Cliff Kingsbury are out in front of him. So these are just, not that these are, this isn't everything, but it is, what do the Browns coaches do well? The thing that's interesting to me is the timeout stuff. And I've thought all year that the Browns have not handled timeouts well. Like, I hate how they use some of them. Those are the two areas that they did not do well in. 2-point decisions and fourth down decisions were some of their best work. Delay of game stuff was good. I didn't think the Browns had much of a problem with delay of game stuff this year. I mean, I'm not surprised by this rating in any way, shape, or form. I think Kevin is very forward on this stuff. The fourth down metric, like Matt LaFleur is really good at that on this list. Kevin would be like fifth on this list for fourth down decisions. So as much as you think Kevin's hyper aggressive and all of that, like there are coaches out there even more hyper aggressive on fourth downs in a way that Kevin is too. So I think it's good. I think you want your head coach to be higher on this list than lower, in my opinion. Obviously, this doesn't decide everything. It doesn't decide, you know, winning games. It doesn't decide the play calling. It doesn't decide any. It's just how, from a numbers perspective, adding win probability based on that decision. And these are, again, mostly just decisions surrounding certain parts of the game, not necessarily tactical or performance based decisions. How are they looking for your team, sort of thing? And Kevin comes in ninth. So it's just noteworthy. Are you surprised by ninth, or did you think he'd be higher or lower based on this year?
No, that's about right. I think, you know, I figure him to be top 10 in this category just about every year, just because of where the Browns are at with this stuff, a little bit ahead of the curve on all of that. And some of this is execution too. Like, you know, when you look at the first half timeouts and second half timeouts, like, you can have the planned out perfectly every time and just freeze and fail to execute. Like, for example, Mike McCarthy's on there. I just watched him, you know, butcher time management 2 weeks ago in the second half, right? Like, and his second half timeout score is excellent on here, right? So, like, you know, sometimes it's about execution on some of this stuff. It's also interesting that the fourth down stuff, that, you know, the fourth down WPOEA, when probably added over expected, you know, of course, Mike LaFleur is like the highest number, right? Or Matt LaFleur, pardon me, with the Packers, looks like the highest number that I can find on the fourth down added. So I think that's interesting. And the names make sense that are up there, right? Like Staley, Stefanski, LaFleur, you know, Shanahan. These guys are the guys that are always kind of being second-guessed for it, but also being known for being at the forefront of it, right, of pushing the envelope there. So I think it makes a lot of sense. This is really, I mean, I could probably look at this chart here for a long time and find some other little things that are interesting on it. But those are the things that jump out to me is, you know, LaFleur's time management not so great, but his fourth down is excellent there. If you look at that, that's pretty, look at the negatives on his first half and second half timeouts and then his compared to his fourth down.
Well, some of these guys that are like longtime head coaches, the fourth down stuff where they get second guessed is interesting to me. And it kind of holds up. Like Shanahan is really harshly judged on his in-game decision-making. Yes. And he really only gets a total added of 7.3% based on those numbers-based decisions. And same for Andy Reid, who's negative 3.1% on fourth down decisions. He gets kind of crucified on some of those some of those decisions. So those are just noteworthy pieces of information. There are 16 coaches, apologize, that are not even shown on here. So like, where does Zach Taylor rank? It's not like you're just going to win because your coach is higher on this list. You have to obviously go out and play really well on top of all that stuff. But like, you're wondering, why are the Eagles 14 game winners this year? I mean, look at their head coach at the top of this ranking on top of the roster that they put together, and it all sort of adds up. So listen, we're going to take one break on this thing and then, hear from sponsors and come back, and we're going to talk about how the wide receiver. Listen, this is an interesting position group. Like, I mean, the thing is, we think they were better, but how much better do they need to be is what we have to pay attention to in the future of this thing. So we're going to take our one break, come back, and break those guys down. We'll be right back.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, so this group, like I said before the break, listen, let me put it this way. When we do these three things, we analyze how did they perform against expected. Did the group perform well? And when you look back at last year, it was pretty bad. It was really bad. The group was led last year by Donovan Peoples-Jones, 597 yards. Next guy up, 570 from Jarvis Landry. Then the next wide receiver, 275 from Rashard Higgins. And then you see a 232 from Odell. It was bleak. And so listen, the expectations were pretty low, Brad. I was talking about running backs most recently when I was reviewing them, and the expectations are high. They still found a way to exceed them collectively, but the expectations are high. This year, wide receivers, I think we started to tip up our expectations, but I still didn't. I think that I feel pretty confident looking back, Brad. I think that we were pretty worried that this was still going to be a group that wasn't good enough to help move the football. Do you remember that, or were you a little higher on them? Because I just remember those preseason pods being like, I'm still really worried about receiver if there's enough here to be decent.
No, I was very worried. I was banging the table that they were not deep enough and incredibly unproven. Now, the thing there was like, okay, Amari Cooper seems like a proven commodity, but we don't know how he's going to work in this offense. But okay, I'll give him that. And then, this is what I was saying before the season, right? Donovan Peoples-Jones, I like a lot, but can he do it with more volume, right? Like, his efficiency numbers were great, but can he do it with more volume and step into that role? And then, what do you have after that? Nothing, really. David Bell, maybe. What does he turn into? What does Anthony Schwartz become? So that was kind of like my question here. David Njoku, right? Or how much can he provide from a tight end position? But they were blessed, Jake, with incredibly healthy wide receiver room, and they never really had to get that deep into their depth, which is why I think it worked out better than I thought it would. Because generally, most teams, at least for a couple games of the year, are going to find themselves in their depth at the wide receiver position. And the Browns just really didn't this year. And so they were able to kind of skate by with those guys as their headliners every week.
Yeah, and two, when you look at the group health-wise, you're making a good point there. I mean, we talked about it with running backs too. Like, they stayed incredibly healthy this year. The year before, they had injuries across the board. Kareem missed a ton of time. Nick missed some time. Like, as much as we're going to be optimistic as the new season rolls around, as obviously everybody's always relatively optimistic about their team as the new season rolls around, you have to account that those two primary positions, they were very injury fortunate. Now, again, Amari Cooper dealt with that late season hip deal. He wasn't fully himself. Still produced, but wasn't fully himself. But he's kind of notorious for missing two or three games in any given season, sometimes up to four or five, and he played all 17. So you're looking at like what's above expectation, what's below. I certainly think they hit above, but granted that the health was above the expectation, that also sort of plays into it a little too. But from a numbers perspective, Amari Cooper, 1160 total yards, 78 receptions, 9 touchdowns. So let me backtrack real quick. We would say that the group performed over expectation. Would you feel right about that?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I was very concerned about this room as a whole, and I didn't think it was a problem at all this year. Like, I don't think that wide receiver, at least, let's say, it could have been better, but like, I'm just saying it overperformed what I thought they were going to be, for sure, as a collective.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Okay, so individually, Amari Cooper, I think it's safe to say you and I would agree was over expectation. He put up near career numbers in a lot of different categories here. So going through, I like to kind of try to pin down grades and all of that stuff as we go through a player's profile here. So I'll try to pull that up as we do it simultaneously. The 1160 is at the top of his single season mark. He had obviously runs with Oakland and Dallas. His 1160 is second. Sorry, it's actually, I mean, he's relatively on par. It's funny. He's had 4 years of 1160, 1164, 1176, and 1189. That's actually incredible.
Wow.
Five seasons in the 1100 range in his career. So the 1160 is right at the, is right similar to what he normally does. He hit his 14.9 is the second best, tied for second best yards per catch number of his career. His nine touchdowns ties a career high with his 2021 Dallas performance. 78 catches, not near the top, but again, that's yards per reception, and the volume wasn't crazy. I was hoping before the year they would pepper him with a ton of targets. They did. The 126 targets is the third most he's had in his career from a grades perspective, receiving grade. It's his second best receiving grade. And I think this offense fits him really well. A double move type of guy who's comfortable, who likes to have those longer play action, longer quarterback drops to create some of the downfield opportunities for himself. I thought he did just a fantastic job in this whole thing. His six drops were about where he's been. His first 2 years, two of his first three, he had double-digit drops. I remember his rookie year, people freaking out about drops. He had 18 in that 2015 rookie season, but he's leveled off and he's been down below 10 for the remainder, except for that third year, he's been down below 10. So listen, I think Cooper, I just think he's really good. He had the most contested catches thrown his way. His 15 contested catches are the most he's had in a single season. So they gave him opportunities to go fight for the football. Not a crazy yards after catch guy. Again, relatively low. He only had 296 this year. That's his third lowest. So he's still not going to do that. But what he does is separate, and they need a separator. And I thought he was really good. So I firmly think that he's above an expectation, even though we knew he had to be a number one. And this is probably like classic Amari meeting expectation based on his career. I think he was above what I thought they were going to get from him, because I was nervous about the fit in the offense and his role in it, and like playing with Jacoby Brissett, how would that feel? A lot of different elements rolled into that whole thing, because he played with Derek Carr and he played with Dak Prescott, who are obviously significantly better quarteracks on paper, at least and at the points that he played with them. So I was nervous about that, but I think it all came together nicely for him, and for the, what they gave up, a really good player to get and perform pretty well. Would you agree?
Yeah, I just think that when you acquire someone via trade like that, or even free agency, there is some concern whether how quickly it'll work, right? How quickly it fits. Like, how often do we see guys in free agency get signed and they just don't perform? It's actually not that uncommon for guys to fall short of what they, you know, tend to do. So him living up to his career averages, and I thought, you know, in this offense, when given opportunities to, you know, isolate and separate, and when stuff is schemed to him, he didn't miss usually. Like, he usually made those plays worth it. And I thought he actually fits really well into what they wanted to do. So a great trade that worked out better than even I thought expected. So, yeah. And on top of that, you know, on top of the numbers, statistics he put up, you know, the $20 million looks really good now too, compared to, you know, when you first got him, right? Like, so those numbers at $20 million is even better. So sure.
Yeah. And I think there could still be some restructuring that potentially goes on this offseason to sort of create a way to lower that a little bit if they can. But anyway, moving forward. All right, Donovan Peoples-Jones is next up. He's the only other significant contributor. And again, he has a really nice year. He did not close the year very well, but would put up a strong year. 839 yards, 61 catches, 3 touchdowns. Those are just his baseline statistics from, you know, a little bit deeper diving, looking at him. This is his best. Actually, this one ended up being his second best receiving grade. I mean, his rookie year, he didn't get a ton of volume. So keeping that working trending higher is what you want to see, at least as the volume increases. So again, 839, he had in not a real deviation from alignment, 431 outside snaps. He was about 70% outside. He got a little more slot snaps this year than he did last year, 19.88, a 30% slot snap number this year. But again, not creating a ton of yards after catch. And this is where we do our 23 outlook. That's where we're looking to figure out how can they create more yards after catch. He only had a 3.2 yards after catch numbers, 12.9 ADOT. Average distance of target was lower than it's been. And that happens when you're running more routes and you're getting more opportunity. That number will usually dip a little bit lower. He only had three drops, though, this year, which is actually down one. So a 4.7 drop percentage, one of the best catch rates across any metric stat you look at in the league. And that's people who do unique wide receiver study. He was one of the best at it. Dipped a little here with the contested catch numbers. Only 11 of 29 this year when he was 16 of 23 last year, which is obviously really impressive. But the thing that stood out to me is the late season stuff. He was on track to potentially hit the 1,000-yard number, but yeah. His last three games, he had that 114-yard game at Cincinnati, and then he went 31, only two against New Orleans. Well, obviously, I mean, it didn't throw it a ton in that game. Mm-hmm. 13 in Washington, and then only 42 in the close. Pittsburgh. So he had a chance to get to 1,000, but didn't muster much at the end of the year. But I still like Donovan. I still believe that he can be a nice player here and is potentially a second contract guy. I would say, again, we were concerned about could this guy take a leap. I think he took a leap to average NFL wide receiver, which is an above expectation to me, going from, again, 585, it's been a steady increase, 335, 597, 839. And the volume goes up, doubled the amount of catches pretty much. Like, I think he's now a steady average wide receiver. If you can get a sixth-round pick, pick 187 in a draft to turn into a steady wide receiver who's got a really, really solid set of hands and will catch. He's not a separator. He certainly is not a Amari Cooper separation guy, and he doesn't run well after the catch in terms of creating a bunch of yards in the open field. Now, actually started to develop, as you would, I would sure would agree, Brad, a nice punt returner by the end of the year, had some really, really nice punt returns, and that's a potential future. But I think he was an above expectation, if I'm labeling it. Maybe he's an ad expectation guy for you, but I thought he was above. I just don't know that there's some huge next level for him to jump to. But if he's your third most targeted receiver, if you can get a dynamic slot, I think there's something there to him being a big part of an offense that is a winning offense. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If you would have told me, 61 for 850, just raw numbers, I would have taken it to start the year for sure. Right. Like, that seems like ideal for him, right? Like, you wanted him to be a wide receiver too. That's what, middle of the road wide receiver two numbers?
Middle to just a fuzz below, like, depends on the volume. But yeah, he was, the production's fine. And some people try to claim, Brad, that he's just a volume guy. Like, if you gave Rashard Higgins these targets, he would get. I don't think so. No. I think he does enough things at the catch point to be considered a really integral and important part of this whole thing.
Here's the thing with what I think with him is, you mentioned the separation, and, like you said, his detractors will mention that separation, right? Like, they will, that's what they will point to when they say Donovan Peoples-Jones isn't good enough or won't be good enough in the future. But I would say that he has progressively gotten better. He clearly has an excellent work ethic to come from where they drafted him to now, right? And not that I think, like, the ceiling is a ton higher, but I think there's still a little wiggle room there for him to get better, right? And I think that he, he's similar to Cooper, but different, and he's very good at what he does. Like you said, like, the contested balls, the catch radius, right? Like, going down, we talked about how many times he digs out those low throws from Brissett this year. Just impressive stuff, and I thought he has done his job very well, and I would love for him to be a part of this. Now, the thing that makes it work, though, is what you said, right? And I'm sure we'll get into this more, is you got to have another guy to complement these two, or else it doesn't work going forward. But for this year, he exceeded expectations 100%.
I want to read you a stat line of a player, okay?
Yep.
104 targets, 74 receptions, 1,029 total yards receiving, 7 touchdowns. He had 109, so he was 80% wide, 19% in the slot, He had 3.8 yards after catch per reception, 280 yards after catch, 11.6 average distance of target, caught 16 of 26 contested catches, 6 missed tackles forced. Does this player sound pretty similar to Donovan Peoples-Jones in a lot of ways?
Very much so.
Only 4 drops, a 5.1 catch drop percentage, so just a little higher than Donovan. That's T. Higgins. That's T. Higgins. He was about to hit the market and make a ton of money in a couple of years. Like, that's the thing, is like Donovan's not that far off from a T. Higgins. If he just puts together a couple things here and there, it's not crazy, man. He's used the same way. If they can just add a more dynamic third receiver in their 11 personnel, I think you have something. So, agreed. Again, I think T. Agreed. Now, T. has done it 3 years, 908 in 2020, 1,091 in 2021, and 2022 he went for 1,029. Like, Donovan's got to show that. But, again, you're talking about T. Higgins, 6'4", 219. Donovan Peoples-Jones, what size is he? 6'2", 204. Not too far off here. Mm-mm. I mean, Higgins is clearly bigger. But Donovan's numbers, 3.2 yards, I mean, a 4.5 yards after catch last year, 3.2 yards after catch this year, 195 to 280, like 12.9 ADOT. So he's getting it deeper downfield, only 3 drops. It's very similar. It's very similar. So just something to keep in mind. Now, again, you made a good point earlier. They didn't push themselves outside of that. I mean, it's like David Bell was out there a ton. He played in 16 games. He started 3. He had 24 catches for 214. I think a lot of people had – I thought the expectations for David Bell were way too high at the beginning of the season.
Probably,
and,
yeah.
And it, people were 600, 700, 800 yards. I thought he could get to 450 was about the number. But I think what we were looking for was David Bell to show us something. Does he have a game where he has 8 catches and 90 yards? It just never really materialized. Like his single game high was 35 receiving yards. He had like a 35, a 27, 24, 22, 23, 27. He felt very much like a below average wide receiver. He had a receiving grade of 52.1. He caught 24 of 32 targets for 214. Didn't score a touchdown. Had 2 drops. His 72% in the slot, 27% out wide. Caught 4 of 9 contested catches, 6.6, very short distance to target. Had 74 yak yards, so 3.1 was the number right below Donovan there. 7 first down catches. I don't know what he is. I still don't know what he is. Like,
yeah, they're
I don't want to give up on him. I don't want to give up on him, but I also need more. And if that means he's sacrificed, I mean, it's tough, Brad. I wanted to have a feel for what he is, and maybe the coaches know more about what he is than we do, because all we get to see is games, and obviously they get to see every practice and every interaction possible. But I think we would all agree we want this wide receiver group needs to be better, more dynamic. Trade for Hopkins, trade for Lockett, do these things. Well, you know, they're not giving up Cooper. They're not giving up Peoples-Jones. I guess they could give up Donovan, but I mean, like, I just think that the improvement person you're looking at is David Bell, but it's like, I just didn't feel like there was a one way or the other movement here in terms of what he is. Like, I just don't know what he is. I don't know.
I don't know what he is either. And the way they used him, listen, like a lot of those yards, right, that he even got, and I'll even give him this credit that he had some big catches late in games early in the season, like in the fourth quarter, like situational catches that moved the chains, I think, a couple times late in games. But it's all so close to the line of scrimmage. And a lot of it is just really sitting down in open space in a zone, right? And like, so we never really got to see a lot, like you said, a lot of what really he can do, because it was all really like he will do the basic wide receiver stuff, right? That's who he is, at the very core, right? What can he be beyond that? We don't know. We didn't learn any of that really, because that's all he was really asked to do, right? Like, I don't know. That's what it feels like.
I think
like,
this
right?
is the thing. He didn't have any big plays. Nothing stands out as far as these huge. And he also didn't have any really crippling plays. Like, there is no. I can't feel like I've thought about a Browns prospect player, young player who, like, I think the thing. Think about recent, but like Corey Coleman or Anthony Schwartz or these guys. Like, yeah, I kind of know who they are, man. Like, they've showed me these things they can't do, and I know what they are. Like, I just, with David Bell, I don't know. He made no plays on one way. He was like, you could have taken like the nameplate off of him and he's just NFL receiver. It was the weirdest thing. Yeah. Like, I couldn't even tell you what he looks like. Like, I mean, and I cover the Browns, you and I do it. Like, I just, it's very strange. It's very strange how anonymous he was, put it that way. Like, very anonymous player that wasn't bad, but what the hell did he do well either? So there's just like a ton of mystery in terms of like, what is he going to be? Is it too soon to just, hey, he's not even going to really have a role next year. I don't know. I think you do put him at a below expectation because I think a lot of us had relatively high hopes that he could come in and be an impactful, not going crazy here, but a relatively decent cog in an 11 personnel machine. And that didn't seem to come to fruition, but it's not a write him off sort of thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like the whole, you mentioned, you know, the whole thing, that he didn't stand out and that it's definitely an underperformed. I would say, because I thought what I saw from him, you know, in the limited amount of exposure I had to him at Purdue, right, is that he was a nuanced guy, right? Like he's not going to separate. He's not a burner. He's not twitchy. He doesn't do anything really special athletically, but he's a more nuanced wide receiver that would be able to find the little niches in that, you know, some slot wide receivers can find in the NFL, right? And find themselves a nice, you know, carve themselves out a nice little, you know, 450 yards, like you said, but he couldn't really do that.
Yeah, jury's out, man. But below what we wanted to see as a rookie, I wanted to be moved sort of one direction or the other. And I feel like it was just sort of very static. And I don't really know. And again, this could come down to usage. It could come down to what they plan to change with the offense. He fits in a little bit better. There's a lot to sort of see there. We'll figure it out. Anthony Schwartz checks in next. He is, you know, the sample size is extremely small. For the year, Schwartz had just... how many targets? He only had 10 targets, 4 catches, 51 yards. He had that reverse that he scored a his lone touchdown of the season on for 31 yards. He's okay. Depends on what your expectations were. Collectively for his career, he's below expectations. He was the 92nd pick. He was a third round guy. You know Amon-Ra St. Brown was picked a couple wide receivers later than him. The career has been way below what we expected. And again, that's not, I mean, there's low expectations for third round picks in general, but to be this, like, he doesn't even look like he belongs on an NFL field at times. And we've seen the drops. He had the fumble in that Texans game where he was coming off the Buccaneers game and he's kind of feeling positive after he was able to contribute a nice catch up the left sideline and also that reverse for a touchdown. Then he catches Watson's first throw and fumbles it, and he never really was heard from the rest of the year. And it's like, I mean, Schwartz was at expectation for me because I didn't expect anything out of him. I mean, you could see it in the preseason. Like, he's just broken. He was broken. There's just, you know, there were articles written about how he handled the Baker Mayfield blame and all that. And I mean, I just think there's a mental issue with him. And I think there's clearly less physical skill here than any of us thought. The ability to run in space has not translated to be as fast as we all hoped for. It's just not there. And again, as you're looking at 23, like, I don't think he's on the roster. I just don't see a roster spot for him. So, I mean, you're willing to take the floor and tell me I'm wrong. Feel more than happy to do so if you want to give him more time, but I just don't really see it.
No, I am, you know, done with the Schwartz experiment as far as I'm concerned. I don't know that the Browns are. I mean, I'm sure he probably does not make the roster next year. But, like, to your point, though, at the end of preseason, we were like, kind of like, is he going to be, you know, it felt like they were trying to
cut.
It felt like he could get cut after like preseason game 3 and 4. But before that, it felt like they were trying to jam him into wide receiver like 4 or 3 on the depth chart. And remember, they were giving him all those targets and just kept peppering him with targets with Watson out there. And it was like, man, they're really trying to jam in this role, right? Or, you know, get him into it. And then at some point, it was just like, okay, now you got to move him way down your depth chart and just get him away from the field, right? And I remember us having that conversation, like, right before week one, like, okay, just get him down the depth chart and proceed without him. And it felt like maybe they were going to try to, when Watson came back, because he, I guess, it did probably spend some time repping with Watson a lot, maybe off to the side or whatever, it felt like they were going to bring him back with Watson a little bit, like, here, let's see if Schwartz can catch on with Watson, and maybe that's a connection, right? But that didn't work either. So I'm done. And yeah. I would say it was, I guess you could say it was, I think I would say underperformed.
I think it's fair to say underperformed. It all just is like, what was your expectation of him
sure.
in general?
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
just was like, I didn't have any. I thought he was bad, and he's proven to be pretty bad. So,
yeah.
He's also not some, like, again, if you're going to be a wide receiver who doesn't play or do any impacting there, he's not a return guy, which
right.
is sort of amazing to be as fast as he is and have no ability to return the football to improve that phase of the game at all. So there's that element of it. And, you know, he's kind of disappointing you a little bit there. So he did get on the field more for special teams late in the year. He was on the punt return team as a gunner. Out there, but he had 12 special snaps in weeks 11, 12, and 13. Wasn't on the field for special snaps later in the year. So, like, I don't know, man. I don't really see the path. I mean, he had a couple nice runs downfield as a punt return gunner, but I'm not eating up a wide receiver spot for that. So he is, as we look at 23 outlook, and I think you and I would agree that Cooper and DPJ are certainly going to be here. David Bell will certainly be here. I don't really see how Schwartz is here, and maybe that's a guy they replace in the draft or they go out and make some trade. I'm not totally sure, but to me, it's like, I just don't see a role for him. So yeah. I think he's on the outside looking in. The next guy up is Mike Woods. So mm-hmm. Woods didn't, he battled some injury stuff, which was a problem because we felt like we saw something in the preseason, right, that would translate relatively early, and he got a lot of opportunity sort of later in the year. When you look at his receiving stuff, he's I'm intrigued. There were mm-hmm. moments from him that I really liked. Now, he only had 5 catches on 10 targets for 45 yards, but to me there were some moments that I did really like, some plays that he made in space. One got called back in a game. I'm not sure if that was week 15 Baltimore, I can't remember, but I think I'm intrigued by Mike Woods. I certainly want him on the roster again. I think there's something there, but you know, again, it's a small sample size and all of that. And he's only 10 NFL targets and he didn't play much in that preseason. So not a lot to go on, but I feel like those are the 4 wide receivers that are going to be here. Woods included in that grouping for me, at least. He's the only other one we're really going to talk about. Because he's the only one that got meaningful targets. Like, you don't think we need to spend much time on Daylon Baldwin or anything like that. But,
no.
Yeah, I mean, how do you feel about Woods going into next year?
Listen, I liked Woods. We talked about this. We both liked him just from the very little that we glimpsed of him, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he kind of just is intriguing, right? I like the way he moves. It looks like he has some shake, right? Those things are intriguing, right? So I don't know if he can be more, but you at least bring him back to camp and find out what he is, right? See what else you can glean from him.
Yeah, he's my 4th guy. You know, like I said, we're not going to spend. I mean, if you're looking at other wide receivers who got targets of any variety. I again think you're only looking at Daylon Baldwin had one game who had 2 targets for 25 yards. That's really it. Dimitric Felton, I talked with him about the running back group. I don't know, man. Another guy who never has found a role here that matters for the year. Felton had 1 rushing attempt for -4 and 2 catches for 8 yards. He, like Schwartz to me, is on the outside looking in from an experiment perspective. But I guess the question becomes, what moves do you anticipate? Do you think they're like, you know, the draft is 42 is going to have some options, going to have like the Jalen Hyatts. I have had a draft that I've done these mocks every day where Josh Downs from UNC, who's a really fun slot wide receiver, has fallen to me. I'm going to post one tomorrow that is an example of what it would take to move up and go get somebody like Jackson Smith and Jigba at pick 21. I don't know. This is a weird draft. I don't know about wide receiver value. Like, the last two wide receiver drafts have been insane.
Yes.
And this one to me doesn't have top end big time names like Jordan Addison, who I think is fun, and Quentin Johnson, the kid from TCU, again, fun, but they're not like I you know, they're not the Ohio State kids. They're not the Alabama boys that have been dominating things and been easy top 10, top 15 picks of late. So, I mean, it's a weird group, and I don't like people were, I was arguing with somebody today about go up and get, like, I just don't know if this is the time I want to be going up and getting a receiver. I wanted to show, like, here's what it'll take to go up and get that receiver, but I don't feel comfortable with it. Now, if someone falls to you at 42 or at 99, it's just their next pick is interesting, because, like, this kid Trey Palmer is an interesting player at that spot. Parker Washington from Penn State, another interesting player at that spot. But again, I don't think that people want these guys to be a more dynamic group. Like, the only way they're a more dynamic group is if they go out and get Hopkins, if they go out and get who else is on the market, like a Tyler Lockett maybe.
Brandon Cooks.
The trade route, yeah, Brandon Cooks is the other connection. The trade route is the only one that feels like it's going to significantly upgrade. And the question is, Brad, do you forecast them? Because the wide receiver free agent market is bleak. Like, there's only really two names that really interest me. You're going to say, like, huh? Is Paris Campbell?
Yep.
And like Trent Sherfield, who's in Miami.
Yeah.
There's not much. There's really very little. Now, there could be a surprise cut. Every year it seems like a wide receiver you didn't expect to get on the trade market wants to be traded. A lot of things to happen between now and then. But the question is, do you think they're willing to go do something similar to the Cooper angle and go find somebody? Because that's the only way they get significantly better at this position.
I kind of think they have to. Listen, I think it's so critical, Jake, that they find somebody, a third piece, to make this a three, headed monster sort of at your wide receiver group, right? Like, and I don't care if that piece pushes DPJ down to the three or what, vice versa, right? Like, either way is fine, but you need a speed element. You need a different kind of guy, I think, than what you have. And maybe you disagree with that because you mentioned Hopkins, and I don't know. Listen, Hopkins is just so good. Maybe it doesn't matter, the speed thing, right? Like, he's just so amazing that he just makes you better, obviously, because he's a complete stud. But preferably you would like to add somebody that can run, just to change the way that teams cover you a little bit, because it's not like with Peoples-Jones and Cooper on the field and David Bell, you're not scaring anybody deep, right? So, at least in my opinion. So I don't know how you do that, because the drafting for the last couple years hasn't really worked out, minus DPJ, who was a late-round flyer kind of, right? Bell, Schwartz, not looking great. I don't know that you can go draft somebody and be like, okay, yeah, that's the guy that's going to make them complete their three. I think it needs to be a more of a proven commodity than that. So I think you do have to explore every trade possibility out there.
Yeah, to like, you look around at the conference championship games and you certainly say, okay, well, the Bengals have three pretty good receivers. Tyler Boyd, not great, but pretty good. The top two are extremely good. And then you go, okay, who else? Well, the Chiefs are a bit of an outlier, but the Chiefs have a all-world, all-generation tight end. So that changes things, right? So they're the outlier. But again, Tyreek Hill was a huge part of what they did for a long time. But, you could consider Travis Kelce the best tight end to ever play. Like, he's a wide receiver. So it's a pass-catching element, right? And then you look around, okay, well, 49ers have Brandon Ayuk, who's phenomenal, who again, could be a potential trade guy because he's looking out, looking to get out and make more money, and he's worth it because he's a stud. But he's fantastic. Debo's fantastic. So that's there. And all on top of Kittle, obviously. And then you add in the element of AJ Brown and Devontae Smith are one of the best 1-2 punch groupings in the league. So like the teams that are mattering are the teams that have really good pass catchers. And, you know, do you have that? And you have Njoku, who we're not mentioning here because he's with the tight ends, and we all think David has gotten better, and he really took some great strides. He was a top 8 reception yards tight end this year. Like, he was really good. He dealt with some injuries, and we'll talk more about him later. But I think it's fair to say that if they're in a 2-year all-in window, that I think they're going to be, they're going to still be all-in because they have Watson, and they have to be. After these 2 years, but you look at the offensive line is set here for 2 years before they have to reshape a lot of stuff. It does involve adding pass catchers that matter. And how do they do that? If you're, you know, cause you can't just sit here and say, well, we'll draft one at 42 or 99. It'll work out.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. And like they passed last year on Mechie and Pickens, and those guys are better prospects than I think are going to be floating there at 42 this year. So, It's tough. It's not a clear, easy path. You know, Cooks, Hopkins, these guys, they want money. You know, they're veterans at the tail end of their career. They want money. And I don't know how the Browns maneuver all of that or work all that stuff out. But like Hopkins wants a new deal if he goes somewhere, I'm betting. And Lockett's going to want some coin. And, you know, same for Cooks, who already has a lot of money tied to him. And maybe he doesn't demand a new deal, but he's got a big cap hit. So how are you working around that? How many void years can you keep doing without, you know, eventually the credit card bill is going to come due for all this money you've put out here. So I think I'm with you. I'm certainly with you. And they have to create more talent in the pass catching department to matter the same way the rest of these teams matter, right? You know, even the Bills, who were just knocked out, clearly pass catching talent all over the board, right? Like the Giants are a bit of an outlier. And I think the Jags were a bit of an outlier in terms of just putting in like some interesting groups in place. Mm-hmm. You know, but like Christian Kirk had a great year, and Evan Ingram, their tight end, came on and got a lot out of those guys. But they're examples of like the Jags didn't feel like they had enough firepower, right? You know, and I'm sure they're targeting wide receivers they would like to have. The Giants didn't feel like, you know, they had Hodgins and Slayton, but that's not enough. They feel like they need more firepower in the pass catching department. So I think everybody's angling to how do we improve these people that matter as pass catchers, right, man? That's what's sort of crazy here. Everybody's chasing a little bit of the same thing, and how do the Browns figure out how to separate themselves there is going to be a peculiar item this offseason.
It's wild what Jacksonville did. I don't think I've ever seen, Jake, a team acquire 3 guys like that in free agency and have them all work out in their offense in 1 year. So
I mean, Jacksonville did the Cincinnati route. They retooled.
Ingram, right?
Yeah.
All they 3 retooled free on the agents, fly. Right? Yeah. And all 3 worked out for monster numbers and big years. And you just don't see that happen very often, but kudos to them for making that work. You know, the Browns need a guy like that, right? Like a Kirk or Jones or something like that. Like how do they get somebody like that?
Like DJ Chark will be out there possibly this offseason, but again, it's like, how much does that change things? The decision there is going to be one of the most fascinating ones the entire offseason, of how they have to add another pass catcher who matters, and how do they do that? What do they give up? A corner, because they have an abundance of corners. Like, they were going to have to give to get here. I don't think you're going to find that answer at 42 or 99. You can add a wide receiver there, but I just don't think you can go into the year and be like, yeah, well, you know, we got this this Jalen Hyatt.
He's not the solution. Start,
you know,
you
just don't know.
Can't be the solution.
So
yeah,
That's wide receiver. Anything final to add to that group before we shut the sucker down?
No, real quickly, I just wanted to say I do agree with Paris Campbell. Like, I've liked him for a long time, and I think he can be more than he has been in the NFL. I will say that, like, that when you mentioned those names, and he's one that I've liked. And the other one that I've liked, I think he's a free agent this year, maybe not, but Curtis Samuel has always kind of been intriguing to me, too, as a speed guy that could be more than he has been if used differently. So those guys are intriguing to me a little bit. Not that they are huge difference makers, but as you said, it's slim pickings on the free agent market.
It is slim pickings more than we've seen on the free agent market of wide receivers. It's always dangerous, agent wide receivers, but this is a one that's like, okay, well, everybody wants more, and that's understandable at that position, but when there's not anybody to really get, someone's going to get overpaid somewhere along the route. So hopefully the Browns can avoid that. But yeah, a lot of intriguing decisions to happen at this position. It could be a swing position in terms of, holy cow, they made a huge move, right? This is one of the positions where it's like, oh, wow, they made a huge move. Kind of the same way Cooper was just last year, a huge move maybe that we didn't expect. So eyes will certainly be on that position. Brad, this was fun, man. A lot of good stuff covered topics-wise. Wide receivers, hash those out. A weird year collectively for the offense, but the wide receivers were not the collective issue. I thought they played pretty well this year, and some excitement to be had with that group. But again, understand where they got to get better, man. They got to get better there still, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It was good enough this year for it wasn't good enough. No, none of it was good enough, as a team. But a wide receiver ended up being good enough, but I just don't think it will be to run it back and say that's good enough, right? And I think it needs to be better. So especially with Watson, especially with the way the offense is going to change too, Jake. And I think that especially the way that we're leaning towards it looking like as we move forward, you're going to need another weapon there, I think.
I'm with you. That wraps up today, guys, for Brad, for me, for All Eyes on Cleveland, for the OBR Film Breakdown. We appreciate you guys stopping by and listening. A lot of great stuff going on at the OBR. Jack Duffin has a fun GM series that's out there. Obviously, you get your daily mocks. You get your things I think I know about the Cleveland Browns. You're getting a bunch of stuff coming this offseason. We're going to be looking forward to free agents very soon as we put a bow tie on this season. I'll have an article up today on things I would like the Browns to schematically or philosophically steal from each of the conference finalists into their offense for next year, because I think that there's things that they can learn and take away from those four successful units. So keep an eye out for that. There are some pretty nifty hats and shirts up. I want to remind you again about the OBR Film Breakdown store that's up that you can order, get it delivered to your house. Some great things, some Nike gear. Check that out. Appreciate again you guys stopping by. Thanks to Brad for being here. Have a fantastic Tuesday. Go Browns.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.